As part of the HIPPO process, you consulted a broad range of stakeholders. In the end, do you feel the HIPPO report and the follow-on report by the Secretary General reflected the views and priorities of these many constituencies, the member states, the UN Secretariat, the host countries, and finally, the people?
I would say with certainty that yes, our report and the follow-up report by the Secretary General reflect largely the sentiments, the opinions, recommendations we got from member states, regional organizations, civil society, academics, who took their time, energy in working with us. Because literally, I'd say they work with us, help us to prepare this far-reaching report. And I say that because so far, the feedback we have received from member states have been very positive across the board. Feedback from NGOs, academics, very, very positive. So it seems that we did reflect their concerns, and not because they were lobbying or they put in pressure, but we are citizens of the world, we are individuals like them. We came from with different background, different experience as individuals. That's why we're invited to the panel. And we mostly people who live with the communities in various conflict countries, some with a great UN experience in the field, some experience in headquarters. So we were basically them. So that's why I would say the report reflected our collective concerns and aspirations to have the UN much more effective in preventing conflicts or in mediating wars and in building sustainable peace.
While the HIPPO report includes more than 120 separate recommendations, its core message is a call for a change in our fundamental approach to the broad spectrum of UN peace operations. What strategies and advocacy efforts need to be created to help member states and the UN bureaucracy engage in a meaningful way in the reform process advocated by both reports to, in effect, make sure that all this good work ends up in action and not on a bookshelf somewhere?
The report, our and the other reports, peace-building architecture, the Women, Peace and Security report, come at a very difficult, critical time for everybody. A, you have a Secretary General that is on the way out. He has 1.5 years, 2 years to go. And then you have a U.S. administration that is on the way out. Then there will be a new Secretary General, there will be a new Congress, a new President. And you have an European Union, a very important partner that praise, commend the report, that is facing extraordinary challenges of their own. Refugee crisis, to say one challenge they face, apart from the endless financial crisis, unemployment, poverty plaguing parts of Europe. What does it mean? It means that we need some strong friends, partners, among member states, civil society, to continue to push for the implementation of the report and recommendations. At the United Nations, you have Friends of Mediation, led by Finland and Turkey. They have been extremely active. And we have African Union that very strongly commended the report. The report and our community absorb a lot of the concerns and the practical recommendations from the African Union. The EU itself praise commended the report through their high representative. So the political will seem to be there, but we have to make people stay focused on the implementation. Because as I say, the next 2-3 years are going to be a challenge to have the report implemented so that it doesn't shelf in a UN library, which would be totally a disaster because no one goes to the UN library. Bad enough, it goes to a university library. But we will have friends who will follow up to make sure the recommendations are implemented.
The HIPPO process took place in parallel with other important global policy reviews, including the Peace Building Architecture Review and the work of the Advisory Group on Resolution 1325. That's a lot of recommendations coming out across a broad range of the UN's work all at the same time. How can they be kept from stepping on each other, from colliding with each other? In the implementation phase, what should be done instead to create synergies among these studies?
That's when we need some strong leadership focus assisting the UN, assisting member states. And I believe IPI is well placed to do that because of the resources, the expertise you have. You're across the street, you're in New York. So I think we need an institution that they're very well connected with the UN and the multilateral bodies, but same time is independent enough to assist. Of course, IPI can mobilize other think tanks, partnership with member states, to really coordinate the synergies, because it's going to be a real challenge. The poor Secretary General, you know, he has more than 100 concerns on his table. He's leaving the organization. Where is he going to turn to? So I think some of us have to do the homework, the groundwork, to make life easier for him in what concerns his competence on the recommendations, to make life easier for the European Union, the U.S., African Union, to stay focused. We should identify some absolute priority areas that have to happen in 2016-17 and then beyond.
On September 28th, more than 40 countries got together for the Peacekeeping Leaders Summit, sometimes called in shorthand the Obama Summit because the president was there. And they pledged almost 40,000 new troops and capabilities. Many hailed the summit as a success, but some others felt that there was too much emphasis on capabilities and hardware that could detract from the core HIPPO message regarding the primacy of politics and the importance of prevention. What are your thoughts on this?
I say first, cynically, that, of course, if you host a summit yourself, you have to declare it a success. I also a bit concerned, you know, that the success is measured in the amount of pledges for peacekeepers. And I would put it this way. Certainly, there are ongoing situations right now that require more troops, the troops better equipped, better assist, etc., etc., to improve existing peacekeeping missions in their operational requirements. However, having said that, peace enforcement through traditional peacekeeping or peacekeeping in itself cannot in any way be substitute for what we have recommended very strongly and where there is a consensus, and that is more emphasis on prevention, political negotiations, mediation to resolve conflicts. Armed intervention sometimes is absolutely necessary, is undebatable when there is a risk of genocide, then we cannot wait too long. We will be repeating the tragedies of Rwanda and the Balkans. However, these are extreme circumstances, and usually that is best performed by a coalition of willing, because it takes always long time to mobilize troops for an emergency situation. We remain, as stated in our report, there will be primacy politics, priority. We have to put more emphasis on prevention mechanism and mediation because the Department of Political Affairs of the United Nations, DPA, I would say, is a stepdaughter of the UN peace and security arrangement. Very little funded. That's why you recommend assess contribution for special political missions, because if it's part of the whole architecture of peace and security, financing for a special political mission, financing for prevention, financing for mediation, has to have a reliable funding, and that's best through separate accounting so that the UN is able to pre-plan and deploy specialists in a timely fashion.
The Secretary General seconded the panel's cautious approach to the use of force and the panel's conclusion that UN peace operations are not the appropriate tool for military counterterrorism operations. Contrast that, though, with the stark reality that UN missions today are increasingly deployed to unstable environments, places such as Mali and the Golan Heights, where peacekeepers themselves have become targets. How can a UN mission withstand the pressures to use force to counter terrorist threats in such contested environments?
It's extremely dangerous, you know, for the UN, and there are no easy answers, obviously, to this dilemma. You have situations where in a particular conflict like Mali is a mixture of groups, some with extremist terrorist agenda views, and you have others that are legitimate in their demands, protests against an established government. And that happened also in many, many other situations. The reality is that the UN is overstretched. The UN cannot become party to a conflict. It cannot be seen to be party to a conflict, because then what's the point of being there if it becomes a party to conflict or perceived to be party to conflict and lose credibility, authority, and not able to exercise a mediation role. So there has to be a strong resistance on the part of the Secretariat, Secretary General, to demands from the Security Council for intervention in areas that are very volatile, complex, when you have a mixture of terrorism, extremism, etc. There are situations that the first responders are the regional organizations. You have the African Union in the African continent. In our report, we make strong recommendations to strengthen the partnership between the UN and the first responders or the African Union. Many countries willing to provide more training equipment to African Union. U.S. and Europeans, Japan have made these pledges. And you have other situations where even the African Union are not capable of, like in Mali, you had to have an extra-continental power, France, to intervene. I would say in dealing with extremely complex, volatile situations, the UN should preserve itself as the neutral player and let a coalition of willing with more resources and capabilities at least to do the first intervention to respond to the crisis. That way you preserve United Nations professed neutrality and preferred role in seeking political solutions to a conflict. Because if it goes immediately head on, it gets bogged down with very difficult thought about how then to exit in a successful way.
José Ramos Horta, it's always great to have you at IPI. And we thank you in particular for those full and knowing answers to our questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Great pleasure.